You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
So what? So let's dance! Hey everybody, Kevin Goatee here. We have ourselves a hell of an episode this week. Paul Tweeter, remember him? Boy, he did a fantastic job with Jurassic World. He's also known as the Heavy Spoilers guy on YouTube. Got a lot of cool awards from that. He's back, and he's going to tell us why Platoon just should be a victim of friendly fire. And who did I enlist to help me sit in as co-host? Why, Jeffrey Paul, the man who hates Spaceballs. I'm sure you all have a very, very special place in your heart for him. GuttingTheSacredCow@gmail.com to say hi. And, well, listen, we're going to have a ball with Paul. Ha, that's pretty good. Let's see if Paul can take down Platoon.
Gather around, here's what I know.
How did you know she was a Nazi? She talks in her sleep. Paul Tweeter, guess how are you, buddy? It's been a minute. Can you name that film? Thanks, buddy.
Last Crusade.
Ah, that was easy. Too damn easy, was it?
Too damn easy, yeah.
Ah, you know what? It was on ago. You know what? That one always makes me smile. In fact, it was also an audible called by Sean Connery, and they all cracked up as soon as they yelled cut, and they kept that. Kevin Goatee, joined by Paul Tweeter and my old pal, Jeffrey Paul. Jeff, what's up, buddy? How you been?
I'm good. How are you, man?
Good, good, good. Jeff, infamously known from the co-host seat as he sat in on, oh my God, I just blanked. What'd you co-host on Blade Runner. You did Blade Runner, and then you also came on. And I think it was like the third episode. Oh, this is one everyone hearkens to, going, man, that guy hated that film. Jeff hates Spaceballs, and so do I. So it was fun to tee off on that. Paul, you remember he did Jurassic World.
I remember. You know what? What sucks is I had a cold for that show, and I had a complete breakdown. And then I haven't had a cold since, and then this week got another cold, so I'm back. I'm back coughing away.
Every time you get a cold, I just assume that you're booked on this podcast, which is fine by me. Everyone enjoys you and you're fun. Paul chose a film that you know what? A little surprising, very critically acclaimed. That is 1986's Platoon. As I said, a 1986 film, a budget at the time of $8 million, a box office haul of $138 million. Turn that into 2023 money. $22.1 million budget, $382.9 million box office haul. That is 12 times ROI, not too shabby.
Yeah. I'm guessing that it's made a lot since then on physical media releases because it was Best Picture winner at the Academy Awards that year.
Right.
Got Oliver Stone Best Director, Best Sound.
Yep.
As well, by the looks of it. So, best film editing, which I don't know about those awards, but we'll go into it.
Well, that's why you're here, to tell us why you think those awards are hogwash. IMDb, gentlemen, 1 through 10 with decimal points. Paul, what do you think Platoon got on the IMDb?
I'm gonna say, can I do two numbers?
No, you can't.
Between an 8.9 and a 9.1.
So that's an 8.95. Jeff, Paul, what do you think?
Platoon out of 1 to 10?
With decimal places, yes.
8.5.
8.1. A little lower than I expected as well.
Yeah,
kind of in the ballpark.
Let's talk about Rotten Tomatoes scores, folks. 1 through 100. Jeff, we're going to you first. What did the critics give Platoon on the Rotten Tomatoes scale?
I remember this was a pretty critically acclaimed movie. At 1 to 100, I got to give this, I'm going to say they're going to say like 90, between 90 and 92.
All right, let's narrow it down.
91.
91. Let's go to Paul. What do you think the critics gave it?
I had 92 in my head before Jeffrey Paul said it, so I'm going 92.
You two are circling like flies on poop. 89.
Okay.
Okay, we're there.
You're right
there. Couple points off.
You're right there. Back to you, Paul. Audience score for Platoon. Same scale.
I'm going to say 88. I think it'd be around the sort of same sort of area.
Jeff?
Yeah, I'm going to say about the same thing. He said 88. I'm going to Price is Right. I'm going to go 89.
93.
Mm. Okay. So you guys fans right liked it more than the critics did.
Not by much, but, you know, same ballpark. Quotes. I know you've got a bunch, Jeff, so I got a couple myself here. Shut up and take the pain. Sergeant Barnes, the guy dying, screaming.
Right.
Comes out.
I don't
him.
Remember any of the character names.
All other right.
than Chris Taylor, because I used to live with a guy called Chris Taylor.
Oh.
I thought it was because you were a Dodger fan.
No.
And the next one, what are you saving up to be, Jewish? That was one of the worst, like, hey, let's get a great
That's
joke.
A great line. Come on.
But it's like
John McGinley chewing the gum.
Yeah.
You have to be Jewish. That's a funny line.
Yeah. I think it was a joke that they thought was funny, but when you watch it, go, I needed a little more stank on that joke. A little more for it. A little more. Jeff Paul,
it's
know.
It's not Chappelle.
I didn't say it had to be. I thought it'd be a little bit better. It just seemed that the edges were not as sanded off on that one. Jeff, what do you have for lines? Let's hear it.
Well, I'm going to only give you one. And the reason
That's
why I'm
it?
Give,
wow.
Well, here's the reason. Okay. Let me give you my story for this. Okay. Right. So back in, I guess it was about 88, something like that. The Rolling Stones were on probably their biggest and best tour. Steel Wheels.
Yep.
And the opening band was Living Color. And
wow.
I worked that tour. And my job was I was with the opening band at the beginning of the show. And who was the lead singer of Living Color?
A black guy.
Corey Glover, who played Francis in the movie.
Right.
And he had a famous line in the movie. What was his line? He said, "Politics, man. Politics."
Yeah.
So every night before he came on, we fist bumped and went politics, politics.
You know, here's one I forgot. You don't drink the water, dumbass. It'll give you malaria. That's what I want.
Yeah.
That was funny. Forgot that one. Paul, any lines for you that jumped out at this film?
The excuses are like assholes. Everyone's got one.
I want to find out. I heard that. I go, is this the reason everyone says that line? Is this the film the reason why people say that? Because I'm hoping that wasn't a retread. And that's one of those lines like, you know what? I think we've heard that enough and we can retire it.
Yeah. Never say it again.
It's like hearing Uptown Girl by Billy Joel. We've heard it enough. It's not that great. And we can retire it now for good.
Definitely.
Five.
I like when people say that line.
You do, but it's so happy. Yeah, thank you. Good. I was going to say, goddamn, Jeff. Five fun facts. You're never going to believe who was turned down by Oliver Stone because he was too cute. The man couldn't even get a word out before he was thrown out of the room. Too cute to be in such a gritty film. That person, you're never going to guess. That's why I'm just going to tell you, Ben Stiller.
Okay.
Did you audition for Taylor?
It didn't say who, but he just said he walked into the audition room and was turned down by Stone before he could even talk.
Well, obviously, he went on to do sort of a parody of this film as well with Tropic Thunder.
Right.
So, yeah, it's nice to, I can see him now doing it because of Tropic
Thunder. That's a great
comedy.
Yeah.
I wish someone would come on the podcast and do that one.
Yeah.
It is propped up on three scenes only, kids. Everyone makes this to be a classic for only three scenes. Number two. One such scene directly based on reality when Charlie Sheen's Chris saves a Vietnamese girl from being assaulted. Oliver Stone did the same thing when he was in Vietnam, intervening to stop a similar assault from taking place. And then the film Casualties of War came out a year later, which was based on the true story of
Michael J. Fox, right?
And Sean Penn, exactly.
Right. Same type of thing.
Right. It's like that theme was hot for a minute, kind of like in the 70s and 80s. Peeping Toms were a thing in comedies, like Porky's, like Animal House, like
Back to the Future.
My Future. That was my third one I have. Yep, exactly.
I guess at one time, you know, there's a fetish for everything. I guess people kind of got into like Vietnam rape fetish. I guess right. That was a thing.
Is that a Reddit thread somewhere?
I'm guessing.
I've just watched it before I came on this podcast.
Yeah. I'm guessing Peeping Toms kind of came about because there was no internet back then, so right. Perverts needed a way to see stuff.
They were tired of handing back and forth the same disgusting, dirty Playboys.
Yeah, exactly.
God. The trials and tribulations of Gen Xers like us had to go through just to get porn. It's like, guys, we still had to hand off dirty VHS tapes and mags and trade as collateral like we were in jail trading cigarettes for other kind of contraband. Kids these days... shaking my head.
See, Kevin, you didn't put in the work. You had to go to Show World on 42nd Street in Times Square.
We did.
Walk on a sticky floor and realize those aren't egg drops on the ground.
One of the funniest things we ever had to do while pledging, we did a road trip. It was a bonding experience. They're like, all right, go stop. It's a scavenger hunt, excuse me. And one of them was, of course, go to Show World. And they're like, go take pictures of all the, you know, of the movies that were playing like in the jerk off booths. So we'd have like the disposable cameras and we would just take pictures. Go, hey, turn on channel 7. This girl's sucking a horse dick. It's amazing. And the guy was like, you cannot take pictures. This is bullshit. And cursing us in a foreign tongue. Funny times. Funny times. Number three, Oliver's
the days.
Oh my God. Right. Singing the theme families. Team song. Oliver Stone wrote the first draft, originally entitled Break, all the way back in 1969 after his tour of duty in Nam had ended. Not long thereafter, the writer had sent the script to, I hit the floor when I saw this one, Jim Morrison.
Yeah, so what a fact that I found out was that he wrote a lot of this to This Is the End by Jim Morrison. Which is obviously, like, one of the criticisms I'm going to have is that I feel Apocalypse Now did this all better and before it as well. And they even got Charlie Sheen in, obviously his dad, Martin Sheen, was in Apocalypse Now. And it's just kind of crazy how that did everything, even down to like using the Jim Morrison song before he did.
Stone Hope Morrison, that's a good point. Stone Hope Morrison,
fair, guys. Yeah, but when it comes to Vietnam movies, either using the Doors or you're using Creedence.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great points, Jeff. Stone Hope Morrison would be interested in playing the lead role of the movie, but nothing became of this. Morrison died in 1971. The copy of Stone's script was actually in the musician's Paris apartment at the time of his death. Stone was given back this copy of his script in 1990 when he was making The Doors, starring Val Kilmer as Jim Morrison.
Yeah.
That was cool. Crazy. Number four, and this is of course always my favorite section, the who was originally thought of when the roles were being cast. Stone originally wanted, all right, I'll let you guys take a guess. The role for Sergeant Barnes, huge in the 80s. 90s, but fell apart and then came back a little bit, I guess, about 10, 15 years ago, maybe even 20. Yeah, you know, Jeff?
Yeah, I do. I know Mickey Rourke was one.
That was for Barnes. Yep.
Okay. Oh, were we talking for Elias?
No, Barnes, I said. That's when I started first.
Yeah. Mickey Rourke, I know, was up for it. Kevin Costner was the guy who was up for this. And Emilio Estevez, I know, was up for this.
Right. All that, and I have more. For Elias, Nick Nolte.
Well, for Elias, you know who else, was based on who they really wanted?
Who's that?
Was Denzel Washington.
I didn't know that. Well, it wasn't in my little 5-second research.
It was actually, you know, in his real life experience, you know, the Elias character was a black sergeant. So that's why he was considering Denzel Washington. I don't know why it didn't work out. You know, I mean, things happen in casting all the time. But I thought that would have been a very interesting choice.
role for early contender for the role of Chris was, I'll give you a hint, had a started off in the 80s, big, 90s, really big, and had a late had a resurgence in the last 10 to 15 years. Huge.
Michael Keaton?
No. You got a guess, Jeff? For Chris.
For Chris. I know the role of Bunny, John Cryer auditioned for it because it's ironic that, you know, he winds up doing Two and a Half Men with Charlie Sheen. But I didn't, for Taylor, was it Andrew McCarthy?
No, Keanu Reeves.
Oh, crazy. Oh,
okay, that's not bad.
But he turned it down because of the violence. And then he goes off to make John Wick 1, 2, 3, and 4. Some of the most violent yet excellent action films known. I thought that was highly ironic. Number 5. Charlie Sheen recalls that one hairy moment that almost saw him thrown out of a helicopter. They were filming in an open-door gunship high off the ground when the vehicle unexpectedly banked hard to one side. Sheen lost balance and fell to the open door, but co-star Keith David caught him, as Sheen would have almost certainly fallen out of the helicopter otherwise. The actor has since praised David for saving his life. Guys, can you imagine a world without Charlie Sheen? Think of all those poor T-shirt printers who would have lost money on shirts that read Tiger Blood or Duh Winning.
Yeah.
Well, I can't get enough of that one. That's a great one.
That is.
Yeah.
Let's.
Yeah. Nothing makes me laugh more than an ironic, funny T-shirt that says Winning.
Or Tiger Blood. Even when you saw people like that at the bar, when I go, you realize in about.
It's hysterical.
12 days from now, this is going to be completely irrelevant. I mean, you might as well have bought a Where's the Beef shirt, too.
I had a pin.
Did you?
Yes, I had a Where's. Remember, like, buttons were a big thing?
Yeah.
I bought one, but I didn't realize that it was a knockoff, so it didn't say Where's the Beef. It said Where is the Beef?
Holy God. Like the Wendy's corporate suits were out there hanging out in the malls at like Spencer Gifts or whatever, trying to see who is trying to rip off their copyrighted material. Jesus Christ. Let's go to the fans and see what they want to know. Let's go to Ask a Gutter. Short one, folks, only because I posted this not even an hour and a half ago. At Ken Bjorn Turner, Bjorn the Viking, do you like any war movies, certain wars only, or is it Charlie Sheen that just runs up your ass sideways? Three-part question, Paul.
So, yeah, I do. And why I wanted to kind of choose this movie for the podcast is because I think, you know, the three great Vietnam War movies, or at least what are considered great, are Apocalypse Now, Full Metal Jacket, and this. And I think those other two are vastly better. And I feel like this is just kind of, this got a lot of praise because Stone was the one who actually went to the war and kind of chronicled it, whereas the other filmmakers just made it out of like research and stuff. So yeah, I do like those movies. Just going back to it, I mean, the cast is really good, but this was kind of before they were all famous. And I don't know if I'm projecting what I know now onto the movie, because I think back then I would have just been like, "Who? I don't understand any of these characters. What the hell's going on? Who are these people?" You know what I mean?
Mm. Okay. Yeah. Say that for the notes section here.
No doubt.
lot of rules with gutting the sacred cow. Lot of rules here.
I like to keep my stuff in the blocks they're intended for. At Movie Mad Motto, Platoon sucks. Not a question. That's a statement, but nonetheless noted.
Yeah.
Well, that's it for Ask a Gutter. Like I said, it was only posted an hour and a half ago. People are still sleeping here on the East Coast. So let's go right to the fun. And again, thanks for joining us in Gutting the Sacred Cow. We invite our guests to pick a film they find overrated or hate and trying to convince us to see their points. But the twist being, you must pick a film widely beloved, critically acclaimed, or a financial success, thus giving a platform to those people with unpopular opinions about our most popular films. And also, no one listens to podcasts to the very, very end, so that's why we do our plugs in the beginning. Paul Tweeter, what are you up to, buddy? Where can we find you? What's going on?
Heavy Spoilers on YouTube. We've just launched a podcast as well, talking about it's called Across the Spoilerverse. It's just a podcast about movies and stuff and news. Go check it out. Across the Spoilerverse.
Are the Ask a Spider-Verse people going to come at you now and say that's too close for parody reference?
So, yeah, I hope so. We did call the podcast Real Spoilers, but then it turned out there was a podcast called Real Spoilers, and we had to change it.
Oh, Spider-Verse, another one that came out this year, pretty good. Not as good as the first one, but nonetheless solid.
Yeah,
Jeffrey Paul. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Paul. I'm gonna cut you off. Finish up.
Please. I like it better than the first one, I'd say.
Did you? I thought it dragged a little bit, and I didn't like the alternate Spider-Man as much as I liked the ones in the first one.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
Jeffrey Paul, buddy, what about you? What are you up to?
Been doing shows every weekend. This weekend I'm up at in Grantville, Pennsylvania at Laughing Stock Comedy Club. Next weekend you can catch me, it depends when this comes out, July 15th, I'll be at Scranton Comedy Club in Scranton, Pennsylvania. And you could just catch me on all socials. You can see my schedule up there.
And you care to share what those social media handles are, so we have to do detective work?
Yes, on Instagram, Jeffrey Paul Comic, Facebook, Jeffrey Paul, and I don't know what it is on Twitter. I don't even use it.
Yeah, I know. I tried looking up on Twitter. I go, this is a fruitless adventure.
Go to Laughing Stock Comedy Club CC, folks.
There we go. That's going to do it. And of course, Gutting the Sacred Cow is where you find all this fun stuff. Gutting the Sacred Cow podcast on Instagram and TikTok. Good old Twitter's GTSC podcast. We're on YouTube. Just do us a favor. Whenever you see our videos, just hit that good old like button. That helps. And if you want to advertise with us, guttingthesacredcow@gmail.com. Last and never least, leave us that 5-star rating on wherever you listen to podcasts. That also helps us with the algorithm. 2 or 3 sentence review, 5-star review. That is a huge help. Jeff, let's let Paul come here and see if he can go 2 for 2 in the gutting department as he tries to take down Platoon and gut the sacred cow.
So what, like I said, you know, a couple of minutes ago, I think the film's clearly mimicking Apocalypse Now. They even got the son to play the role. You know, unfortunately, due to circumstances, Oliver Stone was kind of pushed into almost making something that had already been made. For example, you know, like I said, he wrote it to The Doors, The End, so that influenced it. And Apocalypse Now just kind of came in and did everything better 10 years earlier. Now, the main theme of this film is basically, you know, obviously the war in Vietnam. It's discussing how maybe America were the bad guys in it. You know what I mean? You know that meme where it's like, are we the bad guys? It's that, because you see the sort of the horrible things that the soldiers get up to. And Charlie Sheen's kind of the one being like, don't rape that girl. Bonds, you're a bad man. You're killing your own men. That sort of stuff. And that's the themes of it. But it just feels like his character doesn't have the grit that his father's did. And, you know, you hear the narration. There's some things like one of the narrations bit is, somebody once wrote, hell is the impossibility of reason. That's what this place feels like. Hell. And it's just very kind of pretentious. I think Oliver Stone's work is sort of often seen as being very on the nose, the imagery in it. For example, Willem Dafoe's doing that Christ pose.
Right.
There's bits where he talks about how he's a son of two fathers, and because he's got the father figures in Bonds and Willem Dafoe's character. And it's just kind of weird because there was so many things that this movie's trying to basically be. It's very pretentious, but it's also got like a Platoon video game and stuff like that. And, you know, it just feels like this film's almost descended into parody at this point, where Charlie Sheen would obviously go on to do Hot Shots Part 2, And, you know, Oliver Stone at the time, he also said he thought Charlie Sheen was very similar to him. And then since then, he's been like, oh, you know what? I kind of realized maybe he wasn't. And yeah, it's just I just feel like all of the parts in are you can kind of see what's coming straight away. Like the first death, it's the guy who comes up to Charlie Sheen. He's like, look at the photos of my girl. You know, it's very you're like, well, he's dead, obviously. Yeah, it just kind of it feels like a sort of 90 minute. I think it's about 90 minutes long. If it's not, it kind of feels like a 90 minute movie where it's kind of he lands, meets the characters, they start doing bad things, and then he's got to fight against his brothers. And it's kind of, you know, it's very sort of a dumbed down take of Vietnam, I feel. It's almost hitting all of the cliches that you'd expect to see in a Vietnam movie. And obviously Oliver Stone kind of, he was the experienced director who lived through this, but it doesn't feel like it translated as well as the other directors who kind of researched the things like Apocalypse Now is heavily based on Heart of Darkness. And you know, that feels like more of a gritty interpretation of it. If you look at Bonds, you compare him to Marlon Brando's character in Apocalypse Now. It's just kind of, sort of the lesser version of it, and the fact that it's taking a lot from Apocalypse Now. I just feel like it doesn't live up to it, and it doesn't improve on it in any way. And it only kind of got the acclaim because of the guy behind it who made it was actually part of the war.
Right.
Like the side characters as well, I don't really feel like they're that well defined. You've got these, you know, people who pop up and say like little quips and lines and stuff, but it doesn't really feel like they have characters, you know what I mean? I don't know, there's just something about them. Obviously the actors all went on to do certain things, but I was thinking, you know, if this wasn't a big cast, you know, put in place before they were famous, would I even remember any of the things that these guys are saying or doing? And just the song from the movie as well plays every 5 minutes.
Oh, you son of a bitch. That's one of my biggest notes here. The Asiago for strings nonstop.
Yeah, every 5 minutes. And it just kind of adds to the pretentiousness of it. Now, originally that song was meant to be a temp track that they just used to kind of, in case you guys don't know, but when you're making a movie, you get music in places. A temp track is basically a temporary track for when you're going to see what it looks like being played over the top of music, and then you're going to go in and actually add the music that you want to add. But they just realized, oh, this works quite well, so we'll put it in the movie. But instead, they use it every 5 minutes and say, oh, come on, mate, do something else.
I can't agree more about that point.
Yeah. Completely. If it was used once, it would be fine, but it's all the time. To the point that whenever you hear that song now, you're singing a Platoon.
Yeah.
Willem Dafoe on his knees.
Even Paul Oakenfold remixed that, Asiago for strings. And that's his ad nauseum track as well. Go figure. Every time he plays a set, you hear that mixed in and go, enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're right. Play in the beginning, play it in the end, play it when he lands into Vietnam, play it in the end when all, you know, this shit happens and they're throwing the bodies in the pits and for more of an effect. But when it gets beaten, you know, like a drum throughout, it really loses the effect that it was meant to have.
Yeah, I think Oliver Stone, you know, like I said, he gets accused of being very pretentious. If you look at his other works as well, it's all kind of on the nose. And yeah, I just feel like this is an on the nose Vietnam War movie.
What do you think? What other films did he do? Do you think that are pretentious?
I mean, Wall Street, I wouldn't say it's necessarily pretentious, but it's very much greed is bad. JFK, you know, I think Oliver Stone.
The line is greed is good.
Greed is good. Sorry. Yeah, my bad. But the meaning is greed is bad. I think Stone's kind of one of those directors where at the time his movies feel very relevant. They come out and, you know, they really make an impact. And then over time, they just kind of get lost to the wayside. It's almost like they're big, massive successes when they first drop. Everyone's talking about them, and then they're not something that constantly you know, keep for the success that they have. It's not something like The Godfather where people constantly keep talking about years and years after. It's not Taxi Driver or something like that. You know what I mean? It's kind of very of the time and of the moment. And I feel like that's the same with this movie. You know, Best Picture winner. I don't know if it deserved it. What else was up for Best Picture that year, if we that's compare it?
Although I will, yeah. I do love JFK. I think it's fantastic and a guilty pleasure of mine. I'm going to get shit for it, and I don't care. I absolutely love Any Given Sunday. Love that film. Jeff just groans. Yeah. I don't care. Lawrence Taylor being Lawrence Taylor is fantastic. Sorry, I'm a biased Giants fan, but otherwise, I loved everything that went on in that film. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Okay. Well, that's you. Yeah, if you like it, that's good. But that's what I mean. That Stone basically summed up to me. Very good for doing just delivering cookie cutter sort of things that, you know, tick all the boxes for what you'd expect. And I think Platoon's that as well. I think it's just the very down the middle of the road Vietnam movie. Like if you're gonna show someone what is a stereotypical Vietnam War movie, I think you would show them this. And I don't think it has the depth that the other films have. Even Full Metal Jacket, I would say that as well. Weirdly, Full Metal Jacket was put into production before this, but it released 6 months after because Stanley Kubrick was taken forever to make the movie. And I'm sure Oliver Stone got wind that he was making it. Obviously, he'd written the script years and years prior, but then the word got out there that Stanley Kubrick was making his own Vietnam War movie. So they just said, well, why don't you do yours, Oliver? You lived through it. You can make a good one. And he developed his a lot faster. And then that won the Academy Award for it. And it kind of sucked the wind out of the sails of Kubrick's, which I also prefer this.
So here's, wow, you talk about dunking against midgets. These are the best picture nominations for 87. Platoon, Children of a Lesser God, Hannah and Her Sisters, The Mission, A Room with a View.
Platoon. Yeah, fair enough.
I mean, Hannah and Her Sisters is decent, but nowhere near best picture category. Yeah. The rest, I've seen... that's it. I've seen Hannah and Her Sisters, Platoon, and that's it. I have not seen any of the other ones. 1986 is when this came out. So let's just talk about those real fast. Hoosiers, The Color of Money, Stand By Me, Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Well, that's a classic, but not Oscar. Back to School, same thing. Top Gun, Aliens. God damn,
Aliens,
that's great.
What?
I love that. Oh, so Heartbreak Ridge, never saw it, heard it's great. Howard the Duck, no thank you. Gung Ho Cobra. Crocodile Dundee, Fly the Navigator.
Come on, Cobra. Cobra wasn't nominated for Best Picture.
Police Academy 3. What's going on? It was a pretty Maximum Overdrive, Little Shop of Horrors, Blue Velvet. Yeah, that was also a pretty light year as well. But that's Aliens. How does that not get thrown in the mix? Or at least the Color of Money is shocking because that one is renowned by critics. That's or Hoosiers as well. Same thing. Shocking.
Didn't Paul Newman win for that?
No, because that was the same year Platoon, and he was not in that batch.
No, but he was not nominated and won for Best Actor or Supporting Actor?
No.
I thought he won something on that.
I'll double check. Let's see. But I don't think so. I'm pretty sure that wasn't. No. Berenger, Defoe, Denholm Elliott, A Room with a View, and Dennis Hopper in Hoosiers.
That's what, Best Supporting?
Yeah. And Michael Caine and Michael Caine won.
What about Best Actor?
Oh, there we go. That's why he was leading. Paul Newman, Dexter Gordon, Round Midnight, James Woods, Salvador, Bob Hoskins, Mona Lisa, William Hurt, Children of a Lesser God.
They gave what, William Hurt?
No, Newman won. There you go. Good.
Yeah, see, I knew he had something. It was kind of like his makeup Oscar,
like The Departed for Scorsese.
And kind of like The Color of what was it, what's the one Pacino won for, Hoo-ah, what's that movie,
Son of a Woman, Hoo-ah. Yeah, that's what everyone knows it as soon as Hoo-ah.
Well, that's when he kind of jumps the shark and went from like high speak in
high octave. Oh, we did this. We did Heat a few weeks ago. Christian Finnegan did Heat, and I break it down as like high pitched dog day afternoon. Hey, I'm gonna rob a bank, and then it goes to yeah, all right, and she's got a great ass with Heat yeah. and right. Devil's Advocate. And the aforementioned well,
Devil's Advocate, he's really that. He becomes like Al Gore. He's like, you know, like a southern feminine woman, like, you know, like what the line is, you know, is like, you know, look, but don't touch. You know?
Taste.
And then he goes, chapter three is him doing Adam Sandler movie, which really just tarnishes his legacy. And then chapter four of his life is him coughing up 85-year-old viral dust into a girl that has daddy issues and becoming a father for the umpteenth time. Anyway.
Right. Yay. While he was in there, let's not forget his portrayal of Jimmy Hoffa in One of the Irishmen.
How did I know that would make its way bubble to the surface from you?
I'm just saying.
Because Jeff was in the Irishman, Paul. That's why he's throwing it
out.
Oh,
amazing.
There. Yeah.
What bit were you? Were you young Robert Downey Jr.? What Robert De Niro? What the hell am I talking about?
I should have been because nothing was more realistic than 79-year-old Robert De Niro, you know, fighting the guy curb stomping him. That looked very. Yeah. He was supposed to be in his mid 30s when that scene was going on.
Yeah,
he looked like he was in quicksand kicking that guy in the face.
Yeah, I was a little uncomfortable.
Paul, we got off on a hell of a tangent, so why don't you circle back to your points, if you please? Or is that all?
That was it.
Oh, okay, great. Good thing we ended on a nice flourish. Give me a number 1 to 10.
For what?
Platoon.
The movie.
Yeah, Platoon.
You know what? It's like, I can see the merit in it. The reason that I'm kind of against it is almost reactionary to the love that it received of getting Best Picture. Had it just been another Vietnam War movie, I think I would have been okay on it. But because of that, you know, that's why I brought it on this show. I'm going to say 6 out of 10.
6 out of 10. So it's overrated. Not bad. Fair. Jeff Paul, I'm going to edit everything that you just said before, so why don't you now play your notes as is?
Okay. So to kind of like just to address some of the things that Paul said, and he makes some good points here. But remember, like, it was around the 90s, early 90s, late 80s. You started to have like a run of these Vietnam movies besides Apocalypse Now and Full Metal Jacket, which was a great half movie.
Yes. Okay? Cannot agree more. Yeah. The minute the Gunnery Sergeant Hartman dies, that thing nosedives.
You got it. Right. But that first half of a movie, excellent.
Excellent. 10 out of 10.
Yeah, exactly. That, I think, I don't know what you feel about the opening scene of Saving Private Ryan, but also I think with two of the best things captured, you know, about the war on film. But you also had movies like Hamburger Hill, Casualties of War. So there was a renaissance of these type of movies. Charlie Sheen in the role. Got to remember, it's of the time, like you said, and he's a rising star at that time. He's perfect for the I don't know what I got myself into college boy. It's a different character than I thought than his father was in Apocalypse Now. As far as the video game of Platoon, that's just Hollywood being Hollywood trying to cash in on everything that they do. I mean, that has nothing to do with all of
it.
I'm sure.
It's like a Rambo video game. But with Platoon
exactly.
on the cover.
I wrote down when Elias is running through the woods, I go, oh, look at that. He's doing his best Arnold Schwarzenegger in Commando impression where nary a bullet whizzes by his head.
And Hot Shots, Charlie Sheen doing that. That's his kind of career slipping a little bit, trying to do something to stay relevant. You know, he doesn't have much integrity. He's a sellout. But
that's the goal in everyone's life, Jeff, is a sellout. That's my goal. That's your goal, is a sellout. Who's kidding?
No, Paul, man, I am not that. I'm about artistic integrity, Kevin. You don't know me very well. I don't want to play big rooms. I want to play in front of 15 people every night in a basement.
Mission accomplished.
With televisions on. That's right. I thought, you know, I like this because you can't look at it just by itself, I think. You know, these are the personal experiences of Oliver Stone, and it's it's one, I think, of three movies that he kind of puts together. Because I think the follow-up, even though it's not quite a sequel, it's not a sequel at all, but Born on the 4th of July is what happens afterwards, and then Heaven on Earth. Okay, these are kind of like still in that vein, following this theme. I think sometimes simplicity is good, and I think sometimes people need to be hit over the head. Paul, I don't know if you've ever been to Middle America, but sometimes they need the obvious. And there's nothing more obvious than the differences between Sergeant Bonds and Elias. This is the quintessential good versus evil. And I got to say, I think Sergeant Bonds may be one of the best characters in any movie ever. It is a great, great character. I love the ending of the movie. With Taylor looking down, crying, looking at all the dead bodies. I think it's powerful. I think it really kind of addresses how war changes someone's life forever. I think what this was, in my opinion, was an honest slice of life of Vietnam from a soldier's point of view. And again, it's important that's coming from someone who had a little bit of education, which is what Taylor did have. He was a college kid. I couldn't agree with the two of you more, disagree with you more, about the music. I love the music. I think it adds consistency throughout the movie. Listen, this isn't Scorsese's Goodfellas where you're going to have a soundtrack. You know, this is the movie. I think the music and the constant of this music is the mundane. You're in a platoon. You're 2 years, 7 months, 4 days into it, and it's the same shit over and over again. It really makes you kind of feel that desperateness. I also thought this, compared to Apocalypse Now, I thought this was more entertaining. I thought this, you know, and again, that's what movies also do. You know, one of the big criticisms of movies today, they're preaching to you. I think there is some preaching here. I think that's what Oliver Stone does. But overall, I do think this is an entertaining movie. But you also see the difference in some of the side characters that you addressed before too, Paul. You talked about how they don't have some depth. Well, I think he takes a shortcut to it. Like the character of Bunny, he is a psycho. When he smashes and has no feeling when he smashes that kid's head, and his reaction is, whoa, did you see that head fall apart? You know, that is like, how can you be so callous to human life and you're doing it in front of the kid's mother? That to me is a heartbreaking scene, and it really explains Bunny's mentality. The opposite of that is Johnny Depp's character, Lerner, and it's not a huge role, but the compassion that he has carrying the people out, the kids out during the fire, being the interpreter. I thought it kind of also shows the depth of the division of the camps. Who follows Barnes? Who follows Alliance? Elias? I thought John McGinley, you know, being the ass kissing suck up to Barnes and looking up to him, and then at the end not getting what he wants. I thought that was kind of, I thought that was really cool too, because it wasn't typical. I love this movie. I think it's a great, great movie. I think it is my favorite war movie. I think this and Saving Private Ryan, but two different wars.
Give me number 1 to 10.
9.
Whoa. Funny enough, we just did Private Ryan not even a couple weeks ago on this very podcast, and the beginning is still,
well, you should have. It would have been on D-Day.
Ready? We taped that episode on D-Day completely unplanned, just the way it fell.
I say very appropriate.
Yeah. These notes brought to you by guttingthesacredcow.com, where you can grab yourself a hat, bag, mug, whatever. And I said before, leave us that 5-star rating, 2 or 3 sentence review, guttingthesacredcow@gmail.com if you want to advertise with us. Notes. Me walking off a plane to fight a war and then seeing dead bodies five steps off of said plane would be like that meme of Abe Simpson where he walks into the house, takes off his hat and coat, turns around, grabs his hat and coat, and walks right back out. I am walking in and I am walking out of that war zone. Not for me, kids. Not for me. Yes, a young Johnny Depp before he had a vindictive white wife drop grumpies in their bed. To be young. You know when you see an actor, but you always have that gut reaction to go to only one film and one scene, no matter what film they're in that you're watching. Keith David, for me, will always be the guy in Requiem for a Dream where he gets a double and a dildo and tells Jennifer Connelly to go ass to ass. That is Keith David for me. And every time I see him, I don't get anxiety, well, rarely off at all. But wow, seeing all those bugs crawling over Charlie Sheen in the jungle reminds me that camping is vacation for poor people. With the exception of General Patton, what movie military leader would you guys follow into battle? I'll go to you first, Paul.
Aragorn, and I do for Frodo. When he turns around and he's like, for Frodo. Even though I'd be standing in the army like, who the hell is Frodo?
Right.
I'd still be like, no, let's go.
Jeffrey, Paul, who is the military leader you fall right in the line for and throw your
Jimmy
life on?
Doolittle, World War II. even though Pearl Harbor in that movie was completely historically inaccurate, I gotta go with Barnes is gonna keep me alive.
All right. Or he'll Article 15 your ass if you don't pay attention to orders. I'm going to go with a little off the beaten path. I'm going to go with Michael Ironside in Starship Troopers, Rack Jacks.
Yeah.
He's badass.
Yeah.
Next one. Explain how a platoon has several black guys in it, but someone hung a Confederate flag in the barracks. I think that'd be a little point of contention in those barracks if you have a Confederate flag hanging when you have black dudes in your unit.
Yeah, maybe the guy like went in first day and just hung it up and then just looked around.
Yeah,
I know when you go in prison, first day in prison, you just go up to the biggest guy and punch them. Maybe it was that sort of thing.
Yeah, but I think the black guys would walk in there, see that flag, yank it down and go, nope.
Yeah, definitely. Like, what the hell was that?
Also, Vietnam was in the 1960s.
Yeah, wow.
Okay, you know, no one was woke yet.
I was thinking had to be woke, just still. A
yeah,
little bit,
it's still
shocking.
A bit controversial. I was watching Terminator 3 the other day. In the stripper scene at the start, there's a Confederate flag in the background of that.
Really?
I was like, what the hell?
Ready for this one too? We did Animal House not long ago. In there, when the Larry Kroger is about to take the bra off of the chick from Caddyshack. He has a Confederate flag hanging up in the back. I go, what? Really?
Yeah.
I go, well, that explains why there aren't any black people in this fraternity. But then again, it's also, I don't know, 1960s, whatever. That's whatever. John C. McGinley's character has the likability of Meghan Markle.
Yeah, maybe.
Being shot at is terrifying. Excuse me. Worrying about booby traps is even more terrifying. Being Forrest Whitaker's optometrist, most terrifying. He's like, that eye is like Kirsten Dunst's one snaggle tooth that's making like a hard right turn in her mouth. I just always stare at that nonstop. I go, how?
I never noticed that.
Are you kidding me? That's the first thing I noticed.
Never.
It's kind of distracting when she smiles.
Very much so.
But I got to tell you, the casting of her in Spider-Man really takes me out of it because there's no way a guy who looks like James Franco with that type of money his character had is going to lose his shit over Kirsten Dunst.
I think she's very pretty, sans that tooth. But you're right. He's going for the other fellow blue blood trust fund kids down in Wall Street area.
Did you ever see what's that movie? Don't Put Baby in the Corner. What's that movie called?
Dirty Dancing?
Dirty Dancing. Okay. There is no one can convince me otherwise.
No.
There is no way Johnny Castle is passing up Cynthia Rhodes, who was maybe one of the sexiest women of the 80s. Okay. Right. She was in all these movies. She was hot as shit. Okay. And then he's going to go for Baby. No way. No way in real life. I can't suspend that much believability.
Yeah. Jennifer Grey looks like a wet poodle. No thanks. If you played the little Vietnamese girl screaming when her mother was killed on an endless loop to all the prisoners in Guantanamo Bay, we would know where all the remaining Al-Qaeda terrorists are in 15 minutes. That screech makes it violates every single rule of the Geneva Convention if you play that for more than 30 seconds. I was watching last night. My wife goes, she comes in there, goes, can you turn that down? That is going right through me.
It's pretty annoying.
Yeah.
You think when Charlie Sheen came back from the premiere and his dad probably went with him, do you think Martin Sheen goes, hey, did you ever punch out a mirror while filming this film? Or did you ever have a heart attack when filming this movie? Pussy.
Maybe. I heard Apocalypse Nightmare was Apocalypse Now was a nightmare to film. Yeah.
Again, also done in this very podcast. I felt many different emotions while watching Apocalypse Now. Dark, dank, dread, the 3 D's. I love alliteration, Paul. This film, I didn't have many emotions in that sense. It's just like, all right, it's just the goings on, but I'll get that a little bit later. If you think being stuck in a foxhole with bullets whizzing over your head is bad, try watching Jeff Paul do comedy for 30 minutes. You just get sort of stone-faced. Hey, what's worse, Kevin Dillon's attempt to be
I was waiting for the joke. I was waiting for the joke.
That's what everyone says in your audience.
Clunker just lay out there.
That's what everyone says when they see you on stage. I'm waiting for the joke.
Is that what they say? Yeah.
What's worse, Kevin Dillon's attempt to be a badass or his Queen's accent as Johnny Drama in Entourage? I love Entourage, but boy, that was not a good accent. Yeah. Whenever I think of Platoon, I think of three things. The nonstop theme being played throughout the film. Willem Dafoe getting shot, throwing his arms in the air, going, what the fuck? And the one thing I think about Platoon that no one else does, I think of Leslie Nielsen and Priscilla Presley in The Naked Gun laughing while walking out of the theater during their dating montage. In conclusion, this film is fine. There are a lot of characters that are thrown at us. We only get to know Sheen, Berenger, Defoe, and even a little bit of McGinley. But what's lazier, the character development or Forrest Whitaker's eye? Ha! A second Forrest Whitaker joke. The only person we see with any kind of development is Charlie Sheen's character. Everybody else begins, continues, and ends with their same traits. No one learns anything. They don't have any kind of special journey. Keith David, he wins. He gets the ticket and gets the hell out of there. Great. Charlie Sheen goes through all those emotions. He becomes hardened, you know, no longer that fresh-faced college kid. That's great. But everybody else, there's nothing else that transforms their arcs. I thought that was a little bit lacking. But look, I get it. This is a collection of happenings as if you were stationed there. I get that's the point of the film. Would have liked to have seen just a little more effort in that department. I forgot that.
What's the time span of the movie?
Great question.
Right. So how much arc do you want a character to have? I mean, Charlie Sheen probably, you know, he probably changes the most because of what he'd been through. Everybody else is just mundane. And I think that's the point of war.
Right. That's fair. I get a little bit extra in that department, but everyone else began. But I see the point. I get it. I acknowledge that.
He's still writing his grandma by the end.
By the way, has there been more a much more monotonous, just mundane voiceover that is supposed to contain some kind of emotion than Charlie Sheen's voiceover to his grandmother? Thought, man, wrong person to have to kind of go through this. Maybe they should have scrapped the voiceover to the grandmother and just shown the letters being written.
I'm sorry, go ahead, Paul.
So Apocalypse Now, you know, it's got this gritty narration over the top of it. But every single time this narration's on, it's like, okay, I can see what you're getting at. But the fact it signs off all the time with like, speak to you soon, Grandma, just kills the mood. Yeah. It's like, you'd say the most profound thing and then be like, hope everything's okay, Grandma.
Yeah, yeah, they should have done it. They should have hired Morgan Freeman to do the narration.
Yeah.
Come on.
I don't get why he's writing like these profound movie dialogue speeches to his grandma either.
By the way,
character, he was also a journalist.
Right, okay.
Fun teaser, since you brought it up, someone is going to come on this podcast and try and take down Shawshanked, to which we say best of luck. I forgot that Barnes shot Elias in there. I haven't seen this in so long. That was a cool little twist right there. And then, of course, coming full circle where Chris kills Barnes and says, what'd he say? Just go ahead and do it, because he knew that was it. This is a collection of great performances. The story is fine. This does not pass the remote test for me, of course, Paul. The remote test, if you stumble upon this at any point in cable, do you drop or wherever, do you drop the remote and go, I know what I'm doing for the next hour, whatever, 45 hour, whatever it is left in the film? Not me. I understand this in the 80s must have been jaw-droppingly shocking with the shootings of the villagers, the bashing the heads and the raping of the little girl. I guess we're all desensitized now. It's good. It's definitely, Paul, you nailed it right in the head. This is the third best Vietnam film. Full Metal Jacket, the first half by far, it blows us away.
I like
away.
The end of Full Metal Jacket as well.
Yeah.
When they kill the sniper, like the end of that. But but it also gave us those stereotypes of Me Love You Long Time and stuff like that. So, you know, well, I mean,
if it wasn't
sampled in a great song,
I was just going to say, if it wasn't for them, Two Live Crew would have never made it past the first one. Apocalypse Now will always be the best in this subject matter without even question. But this fits. It's good. 6.5 out of 10. So Paul and I are simpatico. Jeff gives it a 9. Let's see what the blowhards have to say. Critics, 5-star reviews. Platoon may not be the best Vietnam War film ever made. I still prefer Apocalypse Now and Full Metal Jacket by a healthy margin, but I wouldn't care to argue with any veteran who states that this is the most honest depiction of that insane skirmish. I didn't take a single note during the screening of Platoon. It's that engrossing, that overwhelming. I'm not going to go that far. It's a powerful, painful, must-see film, an impassioned and riveting dispatch from the front that's at once a battle cry and a lamentation. What the hell is that person trying to say?
They're doing a lot that of words. Narration that Charlie Sheen's doing. It's a lamentation.
And a battle cry.
Was that critic Kamala Harris?
Word soup. It is a terrifying movie, one that will shatter illusions, but that is the heart of Stone's message. What illusions are we shattering with this?
That America were the good guys. That's what I'm saying. It's that kind of movie where it's like, are we the baddies?
Critics, 1-star reviews. For all of its surface bravura, Platoon provides a thinly conceived plot thickened with the quantities of visual and visceral rhetoric and war is hell philosophizing. Right. The most striking thing about Platoon is how ordinary it is, even at times banal.
I would totally disagree with that.
Yeah, you can't say it's banal. Come on.
Can't say it's ordinary.
Yeah. The action scenes are solid, guys. If that wasn't an alarm clock to your ass, so I don't know what is. Oliver Stone tries to ambitiously capture the full horror and frenzy of combat in Southeast Asia, but his technical skill outstrips his insight. What? They're saying the editing and the visual effects are taking up away from his vision?
Maybe, no. Yeah.
You think so?
I disagree with that. No, I disagree with that.
I disagree with that as well. Amazon, 5-star reviews. I bought Platoon for a friend who was of that era, so she is writing this review and not me, aka Grandma. I am just thankful that Oliver Stone had the therapy vision to make this movie. I am 66 and all of the men my age are buried. Such a waste of life, but they went and fought and did what they were supposed to do. I used to get mad and yell at the protest and smart Alex cursing and yelling and burning our beautiful flag as the men and women were coming home from that non-war. I wanted to be a donut, Dolly B with the Red Cross, etc., but my boyfriend was trying to dodge the draft and had another idea, which I didn't realize. I became pregnant. We sadly got married, and I continued to be pregnant with 6 lovely children, and his goal was to avoid the draft. You had to go to the draft board with a note from your doctor when you were expecting, and then you were exempt. So I had served my purpose, and he didn't get drafted, while so many of our friends and a few family were killed over there. Eventually, he went on to spend his life elsewhere. He has since passed away, and I often wonder if all those boys from Vietnam had met him at a gate and said, "You couldn't fight? I was blessed with many beautiful little sons and daughters to love and support who are now adults and amazing." Signed, Dylan Mulvaney.
So that's not really a review of the film, though, is it? That's like
Paul,
a life story.
Welcome to Amazon Reviews, where diary entries are now movie reviews. Yeah.
I'm surprised you had the stamina to read that whole thing.
No, no, I had to. I love these people who think their opinions matter that much and have no idea how to self-edit. It just flummoxes me when people think
kind of like the
that
three
verse.
Of us right now.
Yeah. Excuse my bad American language. I'm French, living in Florida for only 1 year and a half and still need to do some progress. The script, actors, the colors are pretty good. This movie, like the one Hamburger Hill shows, what lived and endured all our young soldiers, people like you and me, coming from different horizons, brothers in arms, they become heroes through force of circumstance and change forever after such an experience when they have luck to come back home. Signed, Jerry Lewis. Okay. I think he meant to put that as a 5-star rating.
Yeah.
Which he did, because I'm looking at the wrong thing. Yeah. Next one, everything was expected.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. I think it's pretty much... I mean, if you wrote down the plot of a Vietnam story, I think it would be this. It's kind of like, let's try and make Apocalypse Now from memory.
That's a perfect way to put it, Paul. You're right. Amazon 1-star reviews. Now that I've seen it again, after the first 5 minutes, I could tell that this is nothing more than propaganda Hollywood style. Granted, I've never served the military, but know plenty who have. No one that I know who served in a military conflict, but based on that and other comments here by military folk, I am 100% convinced that this movie is nothing what really happened.
Wait, how is this? What was the propaganda of this movie? What's the propaganda?
Americans are baddies, like Paul said. That's my assumption.
Why would America put that out? That's a terrible review.
Weak.
So at the time, I know there was a bit of backlash from conservatives about it because of it saying that America, you know, because it criticized America. So I know there was a bit of backlash at the time because of that. So maybe that's what they're referring to. I mean,
do you think this movie with that? I don't think. I'm curious what you guys think. Do you think this movie really dashed you over the head with the messaging?
No, not at all. Not one bit.
I think it's because there's not really... I mean, the bad guys are all the Americans and the Vietnamese are kind of faceless. I would say Apocalypse Now is a more subtle way to do it, where you've got kind of the Americans also the bad guy as well, because of Marlon.
But that's not answering the question. Do you think... Do you think this movie bashed you over the head? Neither do I.
Not at all.
No.
You could address it.
There was actually a lot of scenes with Bonds where that got cut, where because in the theatrical, well, in the final cut of the film, you never really see things from Bond's point of view, whereas in some of the deleted scenes they had, Taylor was kind of going back and forth between Bonds and Willem Dafoe's character and being like, you know, he's getting seduced by the darker side of Vietnam, and he kind of turned against that eventually. I don't know if that might have helped it. But yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say it bashes you over the head with it. I just don't think it's as subtle as what's come before.
I'm more surprised that Republicans were saying that even. When did Vietnam end? Like 72, 3? Something like that? So this is about 13 years later, realizing?
Vietnam 72, 73.
Yeah.
Ceasefire with Nixon.
Right. So then 13 years later, you can't say, you know what? Not a good idea to have been in that war, fellas. Are we still going to sit there and double down on that mistake and try and stick to those guns? That's not a good stance to take. Next one. Very disappointing in the amount of foul language. I realize that is used a lot in wartime, but it was way over the edge. I would not recommend it or watch it again. Is there anything funnier, fellas, than the pearl clutchers who think a movie's bad because they use, you know, bad language? It is such limited intelligence and acceptance to new ideas that they all go, oh, 1-star because they said fuck. That's so dumb.
Yeah. It's got a face.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a bad film, though. That's not a good film.
I quite like Scarface.
Watch it again recently. Does not hold up. I was never crazy about it from jump, but don't tell rappers that, because that's every part of their interior decorating, the Scarface poster. Next one. It was confusing, boring, and arrogant. Signed, Colin Powell. Next one. You got to be kidding me. This is considered a good movie? Seriously, pathetic dialogue, crap acting, stupid melodrama, cheap film methods, laughable use of music in the so-called soundtrack, and then there's Sheen's quote-unquote narrative and his letters to quote-unquote grandma. I mean, this is a freaking joke. I appreciate good war movies, and we've seen most of them. This one is a disgrace and an insult to the genre. And then there's the disgusting anti-American politics, quote-unquote, of the film portraying the majority of soldiers as either mindless idiots or violent, inhumane pigs. You'd think it was a James Cameron film. It's so full of hate of this country. What?
Yeah, so I'm guessing that's the woke comment then, maybe.
No, I love when people take today's values and perception and put it on things 30 years ago.
Yeah. You can't apply that.
Woke movie.
Yeah. That'll do it for Amazon one-star reviews. And now we're going to have a laugh and see how good ChatGPT is. So who's funnier, ChatGPT or KG? ChatGPT has written three jokes I will now read about the film Platoon. Why did the soldier join the military after watching Platoon? He thought it was the perfect opportunity to finally get some killer dance moves like Charlie Sheen.
You know what I like about that joke? It's not wordy enough.
Yeah, I see the pen scribbling in front of Jeffrey Paul's on his yellow legal pad right now. Yeah,
so I'm going to be opening with that tonight.
What's the favorite dessert of the soldiers in Platoon? Napalm pudding. It's the bomb. Wait, here you go. There you go. What do you call it when what do you call it when the soldiers in Platoon have a cookout? A grill sergeant gathering. Guys, there were 10 of these jokes. I'm cutting it off now. We've had our fill. Skynet loses again. KG 17-0. That Jeffrey Paul, do you think Paul Tweeter has got the sacred cow?
I think Paul will make some good articulate points. I don't think he got the sacred cow. I don't think he ripped this movie apart. I think he he positioned it number three, which seems like a lot of critics do. For me, I thought the criticism that he had of this is what I would have laid on Apocalypse Now. I thought Apocalypse Now was more pretentious than this movie. Okay. But I thought he did a great job, but I don't think he got the sacred cow. Not in this one.
All right. Remember, gutting doesn't always mean disintegrating it. It also means proving that it was overrated. And I think Paul.
This movie's not. No. Not going to convince me.
Not saying it's. Listen, remember, doesn't mean if it's from a 9 to a 6.5, just shows it's good. It's just not as good as people think it is. That's I gathered his intentions. And if that was his case, and Paul obviously is going to answer for himself, that's my agreement and sentiment as well. So I think it was a joint attempt. Paul, the movie did it itself as well in a lot of ways, and you just pointed out those things that I made notes on as well. So we agree. Jeff does not agree, but that's fine. We'll let the fans decide. Fans, do you think that Paul got the sacred cow? Nothing like a good old Twitter poll to figure it out. We'll see you all next time. Take care.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.